We celebrate this morning our patronal feast day, the Feast of St. Luke. As you may know, the actual day is October 18th, this coming Wednesday. So we are anticipating the feast day, which for some liturgical sticklers, including one who lives under the same roof as me, is a no-no. You don't anticipate. You do it on the day itself, or after if necessary. But come on, who's going to celebrate New Year's Eve on January 3rd? Well, as I've said in years past, this day is near and dear to my heart. You are the third St. Luke's parish where I have served as a priest. First in San Francisco, then in Long Beach, now in Los Gatos. That's in 13 years. I got kicked out of the first two. Some of you also know that before serving at any of those churches, or before being ordained even, William and I were married on St. Luke's Day, October 18th, 2008. So we're celebrating 15 years of marriage this coming week. But today, the milestone that I most recall is October 15th, 2017, my very first Sunday with you. We commemorated Luke on that day as well, anticipating it. And I give thanks to God on this day for 6 years of ministry with you. You continue to be a wonderful community of faith, and I love you. So happy St. Luke's Day. Now, over the years, while serving at these three churches named after Luke, I have slowly begun writing an epic poem on our patron saint. If you were here last year at this time, you might recall, though you may have suppressed the memory, that only 7 verses had been written of that epic poem when I recited it to you then. Still, I think it was a masterpiece. Well, today is a blessed day for us, for I have composed 4 more verses to mark the occasion. And so, without further ado, my epic poem on St. Luke in its entirety thus far, consisting of 11 verses. St. Luke, St. Luke, he ain't no fluke, nor is he a religious kook, but he is the evangelizing duke, and he wrote my favorite gospel book. Now, it may come to you as shock that Luke, he was a medical doc who also wrote in Greek a lot. So don't go saying he's a crock. In fact, 25% is what he wrote of the New Testament, all while companionship to Paul he lent. So how about that, lady and gent? You know, he wrote the book of Acts in his spare time when he was feeling relaxed, with stories of post-resurrection facts. Missionary journeys, miracles, healings, church growth, it nothing lacks. They say Luke was a great physician. To counter that claim, I am in no position. But he truly excelled as an evangelician. Because looking at you today, I see his words have come to fruition. He wrote The Good Samaritan, about a guy who found another wounded and took him to the nearest Sheraton. He was left in good hands with the man who worked at the inn because he was hurt bad. It wasn't allergies. He didn't need no Claritin. But Luke wanted us a good lesson to learn. It's not always priests and Levites to whom you should turn. It might be the stranger against whom your heart burns, who is your true neighbor. So take care not to spurn. He also wrote The Prodigal Son, who took his inheritance early without compunction, spent it carousing and reveling, which actually sounds kind of fun, then lost it all, and his glory days were done. So he worked in a pigsty and helped grow the crop, till he thought, if I worked for Dad, I'd eat better than slop. And so he returned, though he felt like a flop. When on the road home, he looked up and cried, Pop! For his father had met him more than halfway, kissed and embraced him, said, I've longed for this day. When you would come back, oh, to God I did pray. And now you've returned, so let's eat and partay. Now, leaving out the bit about the angry older son, what Luke says here is, no matter what you have done, God's always ready for reconciliation. So return, and God will meet you with a plate full of fatted calf and a barbecue pork bun. Thank you very much. It's quite an affecting poem, isn't it? What effect it has, don't know. Well, after that, I'm not sure much of a sermon is actually needed now, but I do have just a few words to add. And by the way, if that didn't float your boat, talk to a vestry member about sending me on a vacation next St. Luke's Day. While I was in Nazareth this June, I was struck by the reredos behind the altar at Christ Anglican Church. It's a flat black background, almost like a chalkboard, filled with Arabic writing in gold. The priest there, Father Nael Abu Ramun, translated it for us when we visited. And what that writing is behind the altar is today's gospel reading, that passage from Isaiah. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Parishioners there can see and read it every week. Father Nael suggested to us pilgrims visiting that this was the central message of Jesus' ministry. And so by extension, it is central to our ministry. Why else would Jesus have chosen that passage from the prophet when he stood up in the synagogue in Nazareth and was handed the scroll of Isaiah? Here in today's reading, at the start of his ministry, by way of this scripture passage, Jesus announces the blueprint for his good news of salvation, that those who suffer now will be transformed into new life by his message and by their response in faith. My husband William sometimes likes to read through the New Testament in Greek, its original language, for fun. As you know, Greek rhymes with geek. But he once pointed out to me that the word translated as oppressed, to let the oppressed go free, comes from the Greek verb thrao, and a closer translation of it would be broken by calamity. So Jesus might actually be saying, he has sent me to set free those broken by calamity. Calamity has broken many lives this past week in Israel and the Gaza Strip. And more will come. Now, I am not a man of wisdom when it comes to these things, politics and violence. But I do want to say just one thing by way of telling a few little stories. I was invited to a gathering just this past Thursday at the Los Gatos Jewish Community Center, and I listened to various local politicians and leaders speak of the horrific attacks last Saturday. I won't go into what was said, except to note that no one there was crying for vengeance. And a number of them stressed that Hamas was not all Palestinians. One woman adding that she was praying for the children of Gaza as well. Now, I sense that not everyone in the audience agreed with her, but I know that many did. Another woman spoke of her cousin, Ram, 33 years old, with whom she shared a birthday. He was at the music festival where many were killed, but he hid in a container of some sort, texting his mother all the while. His last text to her was, "I love you, but I don't think we're going to make it. There are too many of them and they will find us." His mother texted back her love. He is now missing and presumed dead. The woman who spoke told a few funny stories that showed Ram's joyous spirit, his love of music, and his commitment to helping others. It was heartbreaking. I was struck by how similar the name Ram is to Rami, the name of our tour guide when I was in the Holy Land this year. Rami is Palestinian. Rami also has a joyous spirit and an infectious laugh. But on a few occasions, I saw a look of sadness or resignation or resentment on his face as he shared stories of how Palestinians in the West Bank are captive to the whims of Israeli soldiers and governmental leaders who randomly set up checkpoints that ruin days of travel or work, or who cut off water supplies, or build highways where only Israelis are allowed to drive. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Rami confessed that he actually had it really good compared to others because he had a special pass as a tour guide and he lived in East Jerusalem where things are not as segregated. Now, other than the similarity of their names, I don't mean to equate the circumstances of Ram and Rami's lives and death, except to say that sometimes calamity visits with a sudden violence, as it did last Saturday at that music festival and elsewhere, and as it has since in Gaza. And sometimes calamity arrives in slow motion, as decades of humiliations and loss of rights, with daily reminders that you are second class and not important. Either way, calamity can break us. We as Christians are called to be the face of love to all who are broken by calamity, to embrace them in our hearts with compassion. That's about all I can say on this matter with any certainty or resolve, at least publicly. Near the end of Thursday's program at the Jewish Community Center, a Roman Catholic priest got up to speak, and he asked everyone in the audience who was not Jewish but was there to show support to stand up. I did so in my clericals, along with about seven others, which wasn't that many, given the hundreds in the auditorium. But you'd think I'd walked on water or something, given the handshakes and all the thanks I received afterwards. "Thank you for coming. It meant so much to us," Rabbi Hugh emailed the next day. And so the lesson I am failing to get to here for you is this. You, like me, are called to set free those broken by calamity. To set them free from our prejudices about what a Jew or a Palestinian deserves right now. Christ calls us to have compassion on everyone. Okay, I don't know about Hamas, and the jury in my heart is still out on some of those Israeli settlers, but don't turn away from this latest calamity as if it has nothing to do with you, because we are brothers and sisters all, precious to God. So pray for peace. Pray for mothers and fathers on each side of this and every conflict who have lost a child. Pray for children who've lost parents. Pray for friends who will never laugh together again. There's no need to get depressed yourself. Just pray for them. Set them free by contacting someone you know who is Jewish or Muslim or Palestinian and letting them know you care. And if you don't know anyone like that, send an email to the local synagogue or mosque telling them you're praying for them. I fear that when they hear silence from us, they assume disinterest, that we couldn't care less. Let them know you care more. Why else would Jesus, through Luke, tell us the story of a prodigal son if not to show us that we must practice forgiveness? Why else would Jesus point out the Good Samaritan if not to show us what compassion towards the other in our midst looks like, the neighbor who should normally be our enemy? On this feast of St. Luke, may we become physicians of the heart, bringing healing to a world in calamity through the teachings and example of Christ as set forth in this profound gospel book.